The Brit Festivals in Jacksonville made the big news of the year a week ago with the announcement of the summer season musical acts coming to the Grassy Hill. But there's more to Brit than just summer concerts. There's also an ongoing educational program bringing musicians and their works to schools for several age groups. The artists in residence most recently are the two members of Caballito Negro, Little Dark Horse, finishing up the residency with a performance tonight at 7:30 at the Schneider Museum of Art in Ashland. And so we have the members of the two members of Caballito Negro here in the studio with instruments. Tessa Brinkman, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning.
Terry Longshore, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning, thanks.
And we also have with us from the Brit Education Program, Kay Hilton. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So let's talk about Caballito Negro first. So it's Caballo Negro for the folks who like their horses a little bigger, I guess. But for people who don't understand the language here, let's talk about the formation of the group and your musical careers individually. Tessa, let's start with you.
Well, okay, so I'm a flutist, and I would say that my career has been enormously diverse, whether it's doing solo, chamber, orchestral work. But my real passion is chamber music, and I seem to really fallen into the contemporary slot because it allows me actually to express a lot of things in a lot of different languages. Terry and I met, we met in 2001, I think it was. I came down to sub in a music group down here, and that's when we first met. But I came down to work at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival in the clay cart with Terry and Ed Dunsavage. And I decided it was so amazing down here that I was tired of Portland and I just wanted to defect. So that's what I did, and I've been down here ever since.
The clay cart was like an ancient Chinese or Indian work?
Indian,
yeah. Okay, yeah. So that must have provided some interesting instrumentation opportunities.
Yeah, it allowed us to, you know, draw from all kinds of techniques that we use as musicians. I mean, a lot of, obviously, Hindustani music and some inflections of jazz and avant-garde music, plays being what they are, an adaptation, it required us to do sort of multiple things.
Mm-hmm. Terry Longshore, tell us about you and your musical career. You play a lot of different things and work with a lot of different bands, from what I understand.
I do. As a percussionist, we have to be jack of all trades sometimes. And I teach percussion here at Southern Oregon University, so I work a lot with my students. We perform quite frequently, seems like weekly right now. And then, of course, I perform with Tessa and Caballito Negro and Grant Ruiz and Duo Flamenco. And then other projects around the country and overseas as they come up. So I work with a lot of composers as well, premiering new works, and some of them solo, some of them chamber works. And as, like Tessa said, chamber ensemble work is my passion as well, whether it be percussion ensemble or mixed chamber groups. I find that those are the most engaging experiences for me.
So what led to the name Caballito Negro?
It comes from a poem by Federico Garcia Lorca, Song of the Rider, 1860. So there's this piece by George Crumb for flutes, percussion, and soprano from the second Madrigal book. And he borrows from Lorca's poetry in there. And it really, I don't know, moved me when I first came across it about 20 years ago. And so Terry and I played it together. And I think I suggested it to him one day, and he said, "That sounds great," and it stuck. Which I kind of like the translation, dark little horse, because it implies, all kinds of things, sort of, sneaking up on you in the middle of the night and surprising you with different interesting and different stuff. And that's kind of what we're doing, is we're really going into new territory and surprising ourselves.
We have lots of uses for the phrase dark horse, even in presidential campaigns. But so yes, right. Dark horse goes a long way. So you describe your own music as fearless and ecstatic. I mean, are you pushing your own envelopes a bit in what you do?
Yes.
Definitely.
Really? In what ways?
Well, a good example of that would be a piece we commissioned recently by Ivan Trevino called This Is Like Jazz. And we commissioned it from Ivan for the contrabass flute, which is an instrument that Tessa plays. Huge flute that's like over 6 feet long, looks like a giant number four. And for marimba, but he also asks me to do spoken word in the piece. So the contrabass flute in and of itself is a stretch because it's quite a challenging instrument to play, both because of its register and its idiosyncrasies. And then for me to work on doing spoken word while playing marimba in the piece was another challenge that I really enjoyed working on.
So I want to give the audience just a little taste of what you do. We have the two David Jones pieces and a William Craft piece. Which would you prefer them to hear first recorded? Paper, rock, scissors?
Maybe an excerpt of both, because I like the idea of showing people actually just a little bit of, you know, that it, you can have language, musical language that is sounds alienating, but is totally kind of poetic and appropriate, and you can have language that you're more used to that's more jazz-like. And so both of those have those examples in there.
Okay, so let's play the David Jones Music for South Africa, Amandla. Let's hear that first. It sounds like both of you are working very hard in there. I mean, is there any multi-tracking in there? Is this all being done as an as-live sort of performance?
It's all live. All of our recordings are, even though we may have recorded certain things multi-track, we perform them live. So, for instance, in the pieces where I do any vocals, which you just heard a taste of at the end there, I tracked my vocals separately just so we could have, you know, perfect separation in the recording environment. But any multi-tracking is just to further enhance what we already do live.
It occurs to me as I listen to that, too, it's like you don't get a chance to just walk off stage when the other guys are playing. There's just the two of you.
Correct.
All those sounds are carried by those two people. So, yep. And particularly for the flutist, this seems like a tough time to... You have to catch your breath every so often.
You breathe wherever you can. And you can kind of get used to that, too. The thing about that piece, too, that's really fun is that I'm doing things like singing and playing at the same time. And also Terry sings as well in that piece. Okay. So there's, you know, part of that challenge is kind of, you know, using these multiple modalities.
Okay, we will hear more from the folks from Caballito Negro and hear from Kay Hilton from the Brit Education Program when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 10. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're visiting with the members of Caballito Negro, a flute and percussion duo based in the Rogue Valley and part of the residency program, the Artist in Residence program through the Brit Education Program, that being the Brit Festivals that run all those summertime concerts in Jacksonville. So we have Tessa Brinkman and Terry Longshore, the members of Caballito Negro, and Kay Hilton from the Brit Education Program with us in the studio. We'll be playing some music as we go through this next 20-minute segment or so, and taking your phone calls if you'd like to visit with the people in the room. 800-838-3760 is the phone number. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So we got one little flavor for what you folks in Caballito Negro sound like from David Jones. From his music from South Africa. Let us do a different composer here. This is William Craft's Encounters 16. So let's hear this too. So how do you two, when people say, what kind of music do you play, how do you describe this, Terry Longshore?
It's actually a challenge for us because some of the common words in our genre-based description system we feel are a bit of a stretch for us, or we kind of fit into multiple areas. So to say that we play classical music is always a challenge for me because I feel like classical implies older. To say that we play contemporary music confuses some people. So we've lately been saying, what have we been saying, Tessa?
Okay, so it's been our mutual assignment, I'm looking at Terry as I say this, to come up with new words to describe what, because I knew you were going to ask that question. I thought, oh,
everybody has to know what kind of music.
What are we going to say? So the best, well, I found two words so far, so it's chamber groove.
Mm-hmm.
So
chamber
I know that
groove.
Groove. Yeah, so groove is definitely in there, and chamber music is obviously what we play. And I guess that another word you could throw in there would be lyrical or ambient or something. But I don't know. I mean, it's kind of a struggle. And actually, there's an interesting ongoing conversation in the new music community about how to name these things. People get very cross with labeling now because It confines us when we play. It means that we don't get certain audiences in who actually would love the music. I've always found that some of my most conservative audience members love the most avant-garde pieces because they're surprised about how it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. It takes them beyond their own comfort zone, and they get a chance to experience music in a whole new way.
And they understand it. And what's actually going to be interesting with this concert, too, tonight, is that we're combining it with narratives and images, which I think really help connect and anchor and add other dimensions to what we're doing. I'm really thrilled about how that's worked out.
Okay, so I'm going to ask Kay a couple of questions now about the program, and we're going to turn your microphones off so you can horse them into position. With the small room and just a few microphones, if you guys can drag your microphones over to where you need them while I'm talking to Kay, that'll work out just fine. Kay, tell us about the education program at Brit and how long it's existed.
Portion of Brit Festivals has been around for quite a long time. I've been there for just over a year myself after having spent 18 years at the Shakespeare Festival. I'm changing the array of programs and the timing of the programs quite a bit. It used to be very focused in the summer. So primarily summer camps that kids have to pay tuition to attend. And a few other outreach things, visiting artists that would work with the students, but mostly in the summer. And I thought that was a waste of a captive student audience during the school year when we could be bringing musicians like Terry and Tessa directly to them for no fee. So students have an access to professional musicians of all different styles. And they can be exposed to that music. They can watch them play. They can ask questions directly of them. It's been a pretty successful foray so far. I started in the fall.
And what does being in residency mean for the artists that you bring in?
Well, it can mean anything from coming through town for a single day to just visit a couple of schools or just one single visit to a school from a local musician, teaching musician. Or it can mean bringing a group to our area for a week and have them visit multiple schools and universities and perform concerts and community outreach, anything in between. I'm open to everything. I think good musicians and connecting them with our community and our students, any way I can do that is valuable.
Have you gotten some big eyes from the students when you're taking the act out to the schools?
I certainly have. I definitely, with Tessa's contrabass flute, everybody could not wait for her to stop playing so they could ask all kinds of questions about it. And we had Third Coast Percussion in residency recently in partnership with the Oregon Center for the Arts at SOU and Terry Longshore. And they were amazing musicians, did incredible things with household objects, and as well as marimba and other traditional percussion instruments. Students were fascinated by that.
All right, we have the microphones horsed into position, so let me have Megan turn the microphones back up for our guests from Caballito Negro, and I think they're close enough that we can actually hear. We can hear you certainly, Tessa, describe what it is you're about to play.
Yes, so we're going to play a piece that we wrote together called "That Which Colors the Soul," and we wrote it last year.
All right, so here we go. Caballito Negro and "That Which Colors the Soul."
Thank you.
The composition is called That Which Colors the Soul, Caballito Negro, in performance here in the Jefferson Exchange Studio. A rare treat to have live music in here. Good to have you both here. They are in residency, or have been in residency, with the Brit Education Program. Kay Hilton is here to talk about that program. We'll bring the other guys back up to their microphones, and their microphones back up to the table now. Kay, tell us a bit about how you pick the places to take the education program, the schools that you visit, that sort of thing.
Well, I do try to focus on what we might term as underserved schools. The federal government defines the entire county of Jackson, except for Ashland, as underserved. But there are schools a little further out who have no music teacher on site, or who share a music teacher with 8 or 9 other schools. So I do, as much as I can, try to get music out to those areas. With a duo like Terry and Tessa, there's a lot of percussion equipment, so it's a little bit impractical to try and get them very far out. So those are the kinds of situations where I group schools that are more closely geographically located so that I can get them to 2 or 3 schools in a reasonable time frame. But I reach out to the band directors and orchestra directors in the Medford Public School District in Ashland and Central Point and around, and find out who's interested in having a particular group and if it fits in their schedule. And I just kind of put the puzzle pieces together.
Tessa Brinkman, I want to hear about a little more about what Kay was just talking about a moment ago, about those students who descended upon you wanting to hear about the contrabass flute, is it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, it's kind of fun having something that looks like a Loch Ness monster and you play it, you know. I call her Nessie. And really, there are giant flutes that are only really... They're really modern flutes, and you know, people are always really interested because they expect a huge kind of more aggressive sound out of them. But the bigger they get, the more sort of gentle they are, and they're kind of like big babies, really. They go out of adjustment very quickly. But it's always fun playing for the students because you get to talk about all aspects of music and how all the problems and all the joys of how it's made.
It sounds similar to the experience with the Irish pipes, which we've had in here a couple of times from the folks from Celtic Christmas, which is like you go from this room to that room and they're automatically out of tune.
There you go. Something like that.
That sort of thing.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the composition process. I mean, do you two just sit and sort of jam, or you know, do you come in with strictly notated material, here, play it like this? Or I mean, how does talk about the creative process that you work on together?
Well, on that piece that we composed together, we... certainly would just come together and jam, try different ideas. Tessa was writing melodies and had suggested kind of rhythmic framework to put them to, and we would try that. But it's always a collaborative process. We both bring ideas to the table, and we also both feel very strongly about being completely open in our collaborative process as a duo. We feel completely comfortable saying, you know, I'm just really not into playing this piece. And we've had pieces in our repertoire where one of us has just said, you know, I just really don't want to play this. And the other person says, okay, that's great. I'm not going to force you to. And it's like that in our compositional process, too, where there will be certain parts of a piece that aren't working for one of us, or that we encourage each other to, you know, really try, experiment with this or try this. We'll see where that goes. And so it's quite fun.
And I just want to say something about that piece, too. That was only a tiny excerpt, and it was stripped-down excerpt, because Terry would have a whole bunch of other fancy stuff that sounds amazing to go with that piece in the parts that we played. So that was an excerpt and a stripped-down excerpt. If people come to the concert tonight, they'll hear all sorts of amazing sounds and harmonies that go with that.
So we just got a couple of shades of the rainbow in that version of That Which Colors the Soul.
Exactly.
I couldn't figure out when you first came into the room and we're setting up equipment here where the sitar sound came from, and I finally noticed that it came from an iPhone. So there is there are a few tricks of the trade you have to bring around with you.
Yes, the iSitar or iTambura in this case.
Yeah, there's an app for that.
It's iTabla Pro. Yeah.
As long as it's the Pro version. Yeah. We're talking to Caballito Negro, the duo flute and percussion, Tessa Brinkman and Terry Longshore, and Kay Hilton from the Brit Education Program, who brought them out to schools over the course of the last few days. Join us on the exchange if you have questions or comments. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Looks like we have a call here from Grumpy John in Grants Pass. Welcome to the exchange.
Hi. You were talking about what to call this music, and I was struck by how much reminded me of Bismillah Khan, who is an Indian classical music. He was so revered by India, the people of India, that they held a 3-day wake in his honor. And if you're not familiar with Bismillah Khan and classical Indian music, I highly suggest you check it out. I think you'll find it very congruent with your sound.
All right. I think I saw a knowing glance from Terry. So thanks for that, Grumpy John.
Yeah, thank you. We both have studied Hindustani music quite extensively. I studied at the Ali Akbar College of Music in San Rafael, California for a few years. That's where I started my tabla studies. And Tessa has studied the bansuri flute and the sound of the bansuri flute especially, which she applies to her special flute, which she's playing this morning, which is a standard C flute but has a Baroque-style wooden head joint to emulate the sound of the bansuri. So it excites me that you think we sound like that. That's a great honor. Thank you. And we are definitely inspired by Hindustani music in that piece, although we're not trying to necessarily replicate it. We are drawing heavily from its influence.
Well, you noticed another comparison here. Greg in Grants Pass dropped off this question. He said that he saw a concert on July 4th, 1969 with the group My Crystal Cider with some cello music you should look up. I don't see any knowing glances there. So
no, I don't know that.
Sounds like a YouTube exploration.
Yeah,
it's amazing
what
you can find in the world on the internet now in music.
Yeah,
you can pretty much check out and see if anybody did anything that you might be thinking about doing now.
Yeah.
So let's talk about what you do now, though. And there are several references in your work on your website to basing what you do on poetry. So obviously a verbal medium, a verbal art form. This is not specifically always, anyway, a verbal art form. So how do you make the connection? How do you transliterate poetry into music here?
Well, I mean, poetry, you know, is mysterious. I mean, it goes beyond what prose can do. And we're both interested in words, spoken words, language. I've got a particular passion of sort of fusing language and music together, sort of a lifelong experiment in that, and this is sort of one of those processes. When we selected the music, we decided that we wanted to do narratives between the pieces. So for this concert, I've written some, quoting Joan Didion, wonderful essayist, for one of them, for the Bill Craft piece, actually, and also Mary Oliver. So I think that's kind of one of the first art forms anyway, was the bard, you know, the storyteller who was telling poetry and singing. It's natural, I think, that language and music sit together and they both inform each other.
Kay, I want to finish up with you from the Brit Education Program. This is the first season of residency, is that right?
Yes, there were a few experiments with individual residencies before I arrived, but I really wanted to make it a cornerstone of our programs.
They work about like you'd hoped?
It's working out beautifully. It's kind of exploded. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to plan for next year. And it's entirely funded by grants and private donations. So if people want to help continue this, they can go to britfest.org/support education.
Okay, and you can catch Caballito Negro live tonight at 7:30 at the Schneider Museum of Art in Ashland. Tessa Brinkman, Terry Longshore, our Caballito Negro, thank you so much for joining us here on The Exchange.
Thank you.
And
thanks.
Kay Hilton, good to have you too as well.
Thank you very much.